Questlove Supreme is a production of iHeartRadio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Questlove Supreme here on iHeart. First of all, our family. What's up, Laya?
Hey, yes. Hallelujah. Hey.
How you doing? Why why you giving me side eye already?
Me? I'm not giving you side eye. I'm excited. Are you
talking? Oh, no, no. I know. This.
Now, this has been a long time in the making. This
yeah.
Been a long
time. Let me just bigypass you guys. Zumpay Bill and Fontigolo.
What up? All right. Let's get into it.
We've been waiting for this episode probably longer than we care to actually state on the record. I don't know why it's taken almost 3.5 years for us to finally bring to fruition the Jill Scott episode. I can't say enough about this woman. She helped me get my first Grammy, and I appreciate that. Jill Scott, she saved my life. She gave me my first and only hit.
Wow. Wait, damn, that is.
Wow. And only hit.
Damn.
No, ladies and gentlemen, no, for real, Jill Scott is much more than that to me. She's actually, she's literally one of my favorite artists ever. Accomplished poet, singer, actress,
yes.
Extraordinaire. Please welcome to Questlove Supreme, finally, the one and only Jill. Wait, Jill, what's your middle name?
Nada.
I'm going to look this up on the internet, Jill. Wait, why don't we know your middle name?
Like,
wait a minute, Jill. Did you take your middle name off of the internet?
The internet, yes.
You did? Wow.
I did.
Is it Barbara?
She probably got a black ass middle name. Like
I know.
Leon
what is it? What is
Renee.
It?
Hey, Renee. You know,
ladies and gentlemen, welcome.
Another syllable.
This Jill another, Maybelline like, Scott to Questlove yes. Supreme. It's probably Mabel.
Leontine.
I like that.
Come on, Jill.
I like Loretta.
Loretta.
Wait,
Loretta.
Are you trying to tell me that your middle name will never be known to the world ever?
If you search hard enough, you'll find it.
Jill is really secretive. Like, she didn't want to tell me where she was at. She didn't want to tell me where her house was.
Uh-oh. So,
he's really
not even, not even a state.
Yeah, not even a state. She ain't going to give me a state. No.
Nope.
Because you're a Philly for life?
Yeah. Shit. No Philly all day. And what? I just like balance, man. I try to find a place where people don't know me at all for anything. And I go there and it's great. We have conversations about something and nothing. We get angry with each other. You know, call HOA on each other. It's nice.
You're trying to tell me that you're in a circle in which people may or may not know who you are?
That's right.
No, not impossible. They all white?
I believe that.
I can believe it. Yeah,
it's possible.
There's white famous and then there's black famous.
Yes, and I'm in the whole of white famous. Okay. Yes. And white famous and no income tax, no state income tax. Ooh. All that made sense to me. An acreage. I was like, yep, I'm in.
Wait, there's another place that's music. Not Delaware that does this?
Yeah, I'm in Tennessee.
Oh, good, she said it. I was scared she was going to beat us up if we said it. Okay,
no, I won't fight you, I promise.
Nigga, I'm scared of you. You know this.
You always say that. Like,
the first song was getting it. Let me tell you something about Vaseline and seeing earrings off. I'll never forget.
Wait, Jill, am I allowed?
Oh, no. Oh my God.
Wait.
Please. Oh, my God. Story time.
Can I tell y'all the first 7 words I ever heard Jill Scott ever say?
Oh, no. Please.
Okay, so Jill Scott is best friends with a mutual friend of ours, Leslie Arnett Pena. Leslie is the voice of, on Lazy Afternoon, on Do You Want
it's
More?
It's a Lazy Afternoon. Okay.
Right. So I believe maybe this is when Leslie's cutting it. I'm not certain, but what I do know is that she brought her girlfriend down to the studio with her. Now, what makes this even crazier, I'm not knowing that the guy that Jill was once dating is also currently messing with a roommate of someone that I lived with in the house that I was living in during the Do You Want More period.
This sounds like an episode of Insecure.
This is so terrible.
Is this a tall nigga?
This is so messy.
This is so messy. All I know.
God. This is terrible.
This is all I know.
This is terrible.
I'm so
not ready. Sight unseen. I sat down on the couch and she must have gotten the news that he did her wrong. And she said in the most, think of the most Oprah Harpo voice you can muster up.
You told
I hate Oprah. You for that. I hate
she
you.
She said,
that.
She said, I'm gonna cut his dick off. Jill Scott, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, yep, that is it.
Jill, wow. Jill, is your middle name Heather?
Oh God!
I don't know what I was doing.
That's what the internet just told me.
I don't know what I was doing. I was either in mid chew. I don't know if I was at my lunch or reading something, but I was like, "Oh, I'm scared of this woman forever."
What happened to him? What happened to the dude whose dick was gonna get cut off? What happened?
Let's see. What do I know? I know that.
Because I know my side of the story at the house.
I can't tell you the rest. It's so bad.
I think the statute of limitations is up. I think you can go in.
Okay. So I went to the house. I went to the house and she was there at the house.
Raheem, right? Sorry, go ahead.
Drinking my Kool-Aid out of the glass I bought.
Bitch, no.
What?
Yep. I happen to have a razor blade.
Oh, boy.
All right, this is Questlove Supreme Rhyme. Thank you. Till next week, ladies and gentlemen.
I love it.
Yeah.
Oh, and, my God, keep going.
Everyone lived. Okay. But wardrobe didn't live.
Ah.
His wardrobe didn't live.
Did you cut up his jeans?
You cut up everything? And throwback era.
All the jerseys.
The hockey jersey era.
Everything. And not on the scene.
She happened to have.
Wait, can I ask you something? Wait, you can.
Not
you
on
can,
the scene.
You can settle something for me, Jill.
No. Nope.
Was he at all involved in music? Because no. I have another issue with him. 3 weeks later. Now, mind you, this guy is messing with a girl that lives in my house. And
she
he steals my
house?
Drum machine. Dog, I put two and two together way after the fact. Like,
ew.
You all just Tarantino'd your way into my timeline. And then I had to put the story together to realize what was going on. But he also, I have reason to believe that he stole one of my drum machines
probably
out of that house.
Probably.
And so, yeah, but that's how I met.
And that's how
you.
Y'all
so
met?
I was, that's how
Dang,
I met.
That's
and
the
then
first
the second
thing I said
time,
to Questlove. Yeah.
But the second time, Jill has made three grand entrances in my life before I even started a real conversation with her. Now, the second one was a little blurry because at the time I was at Rich Medina's house, it was like a barbecue and whatever, and it was like a spades tournament. And one of my greatest shames is also...
You don't know how.
Not knowing how.
I learned late. It's okay.
Right. So that part's a little blurry, but I remember Jill there. But the third time... with meeting Jill was at a poetry slam in West Philadelphia around 54th and Baltimore Avenue.
I don't remember this.
You don't remember this?
No.
All right. So I believe either Torpedo Mason introduced you, somebody, a fellow poet introduced you, and you cut her off before. It was like, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to bring up someone to the stage. And da 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 da, and then all of a sudden, from the back, you went into Jodeci's freaking you from the audience. So it's like, me. Ladies and gentlemen, okay, that was Ursula Rucker of Rich Medina, and coming up next is a sister from North Philadelphia.
Every time I close my eyes,
exactly, she went right. But no, man, it was like you know how like Felicia Rashad. Over enunciates words like her last name's Allen, like Felicia Ayers Allen or Debbie Allen, from the back of the room. Every time I close my eyes, and we lost our ghost. Like, who the fuck is this? And she's just like slowly walked to the stage, it like our tongues were collectively wagging, like, who the fuck is that? And
I don't remember that at all.
Did I miss out on Jill's sexy poet, like her whole sexual poetry thing? That
dog, you weren't there for that?
No, I heard it was nothing to be fucked with.
Yeah, 1999. I think you gotta been 16.
Aw, Puddin'.
Oh, I always do that.
Puddin'.
There's a wink in there. No, oh. But I believe 2-3 weeks later, this is when you got me sort of, you started coming around the Sigma with Scott. So,
nope.
No. Jill, tell a story.
No.
You don't even remember Baltimore Avenue.
No, I don't. I don't remember Baltimore Avenue. The it was so much poetry at the time. We were everywhere trying to earn $15 anywhere. Bar mitzvahs, wow. Birthday parties, theaters, libraries. I was everywhere just trying to earn a living as a poet. So I really don't remember that. But I do remember the night I met yo ass. Now, we were on a... I'm trying to remember the brother's name. He had a small record store.
Okay.
And he had closed the record store out for the evening so people could read. I think Rich might have been DJing.
That was Rich's spot. Oh, Keith. Keith McPhee.
Keith McPhee had a record store.
My current product manager,
it
Keith.
Was
still working Keith. For me 30 years wow. later. Yeah.
It was Keith. Look at that. Okay.
Keith had the layup. Yes, in South Philly.
Yes. So mm-hmm. I think we were there, if I'm not mistaken, and I read something and I came off and you said, do you write songs? And I lied. I said, yes, which I did not do. And you were like, okay, bet. I'm going to hook you up. You should come to the studio. Had I been to a studio yet? I don't even think I had been to a studio anywhere except for the night I met you. At a
Sigma
yes. Sound, where I met you. That was the first time I had ever been in the studio. This will be the second. So you hooked me up with Scott Storch,
right?
Who I knew only because I had seen him playing the keys at every jam session,
right?
And every time that I saw you guys perform, you know, Scott was there. You asked me if I could write a song. I said okay. Didn't know how at all. And we sat there and Scott and I got blazed for like, I don't know, like hours.
So you just weaned, you got me yeah. like you weren't wow. an experienced song singer.
No, I'm glad I knew this
back then.
But was that the first iteration? Like you gave him your first draft? Or you?
Yeah.
Like,
wow. Yeah.
Because there were 7 songs, but you got me. I still had that cassette. You
there
got me was number
songs?
3.
There were 7 songs?
You worked on 7 sketches. You got me was number 3. And when I heard it, I said to myself, this song's going to change my life. I knew 10 seconds in when you sang it, I was like, this shit's going to change my life. And instantly ran downstairs to Dave Ivory's room. And Scott happened to be there. And we just cut it right on the spot because I knew I wanted to get it out the way before like Rich and Tariq caught demo-itis. I was like, this song's going to change my life. So before Rich and Tariq hear it in its current state and get demo-itis and be like, nope, this is the version of that we're going to, I was like, let me do the drums right now. And then there's a whole nother like 8-hour story of even the battle of drum and bass music at the end of it.
That was a battle?
Oh, dog. Because then it was like, why are you going to ruin the song? Like just be like Rich's whole drum was like, look, stay straight ahead, whatever. And I was like, no, this is a drum and bass song. Because initially I wanted the whole song to be that. And Rich was like,
that,
no.
Yeah, that one did.
Keep it straight ahead and da-da-da. So, you know, and the compromise of it all was like, okay, at the end, you get your little prize at the in the cereal box. Okay, Amir?
We still waiting for that part, too. Like, I just knew it was. I'm just, every time you talk about that story, I'm going to just say it should have been part 2 to that song.
We had part 2, part 3. We ended up having so many versions of the song.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
From live.
Yeah. On the Things Fall Apart box set.
The $2 bill performance is probably still one of my favorites ever.
Yes.
In DC, right?
Yep.
Wait a minute.
I was there.
We are great. We're jumping the gun. We're in 1999. Jill Scott.
Yeah.
Where were you born?
Where were you born?
at Albert Einstein Hospital in North Philadelphia.
That ain't where you want to be born.
So you are true blue, N-O-R-F, North Philly.
N-O-R-F. Yep, North Philly.
Where? Okay, where in? Because North Philly is anything above Broad Street to me. Like, are you Ogden's Avenue or like what? What's like your North Philly?
I'm 23rd and Lehigh.
Oh.
Yeah, Lehigh, Broad and Lehigh Avenue.
Okay, that's banging now. What was it then?
It was the bottom.
Yikes.
It was the bottom then.
That's near J Street.
I don't know J Street.
It's near, I
know. You know shooting there. It was a big shooting, like really bad.
Many shootings. You know where Dobbins is? Dobbins Vocational High School?
Yeah.
I taught there for a couple of months, but I lived around the corner from Dobbins.
You were a school teacher too?
I'm an English teacher.
Wow.
Jill, we hardly knew ye. Okay, so in growing up in Philadelphia, like, all right, first of all, how did you, because the thing is that if you're saying you're in North Philly, especially growing up in the 80s, getting out of North Philly is an achievement on its own.
Yes, indeed, sir.
So what was life like navigating through North Philadelphia?
You know what? I know that it was tough. I know that there was a lot of murders. There were a lot. I lost a lot of we all lost a lot of young men early. One summer, we lost like 7 young guys. You know, I knew them all. They were drug dealers. But I the drug dealers that I knew, they carried my mom's groceries home. You know, they wrote me poetry. They sat on my steps and let me read them Edgar Allan Poe. You know, they were sweet to me. And I know it seems absurd to some people, but I had a very, very idyllic concept of the hood. It was beautiful. You know, there was neighbors who played the guitar and kept their screens open, and so you could hear it. There were neighbors that everybody swept, you know, and then crack came. Crack came like a thief in the night and just destroyed everything good. Not everything. There were still good people around, but it made it really hard. You know, I definitely got shot at. I definitely had to fight a lot. And then I thought of ways of trying to not hurt anybody, because I thought I was going to end up in jail if I didn't figure it out. So, you know, my mom took me to juvie. I saw some stuff in there and I was like, okay, wait, don't have to worry about me.
She took you to juvie or you went to juvie?
No, she took me to juvie.
On some Scared Straight, John?
Yeah, before there was a Scared Straight. She was like, you should, you know, she didn't tell me where we were going. We just got on the 33 and we got off and ended up in juvie. It was a whole bunch of girls that looked a lot like me, that looked like they had been through hell in a basket. You know, I heard a couple of horrible stories about being in juvie and I was like, I'm good. Like, I have to find a way to survive without fighting, without having to defend myself, because I don't, you know, I'm not the kind of person that just puts my hands up and we're going to fight and then it's over. You know, I don't know how to stop, because I'm kind. You know, it might sound terrible, but I am. I don't want to hurt anybody. So I'm in a position where in order to survive, I'm going to have to hurt somebody pretty badly and they may not make it. So I figured out other ways. I speak to everybody.
Do you have siblings?
I don't. Well, I do. I have a sister from my father. Yeah.
But you grew up the lone child in your household?
Yeah. I knew all the crackheads.
And so you didn't have the story of, I'm going to get my cousin to fuck you up? Like, there's none of that?
My cousins hated my ass. My cousins hated me.
Well, I could read through her words that Jill didn't have a problem being able to fight. Because that was the problem, that you started being good at it, it sounded like.
It wasn't, I would never call it being good at fighting. It was.
You didn't lose too often.
It wasn't fair.
She happened to be carrying a razor blade.
It just wasn't fair. You know, I didn't know how to stop. I didn't know how to win a fight and stop. So I don't really, I try my best not to be in that position. Right. To the very end, to the bitter end, to the you going to jail end. And I didn't want that. for myself. I was scared of it. So I embraced every possible way to be kind and loving and open in my hood. So, and try at the same time not to be a sucker, you know, to get played by the crackheads or by the drug dealers, but, you know, be friendly and be nice and be helpful where you can, but not give anybody money. Cause if you give crackheads money, they come back the next day like a squirrel, you know? So, you know, trying to find that balance to navigate living or dying. And yes, it was very hard to get out of North Philly. So I worked 3 jobs and did poetry and hoped that I could make some kind of a living. Got in Dobbins High School, was teaching English. It was dope. I loved it, but they weren't very helpful. Go ahead.
You got in Dobbins and subsequently went back there to teach?
No, I went to Girls High.
Okay.
But I taught at Dobbins and I realized I wasn't going to make any money, which is so foul to this day, that I wasn't going to make any money and I wasn't going to have any kind of support. There's no support for teachers. My principal told me I was young and idealistic and I would get over it. And I quit. I quit everything that day. Like, this sucks. There's got to be something else. And then Ozzy Jones, I don't know if you got, y'all know Ozzy?
Yes, yes, yes.
Ozzy Jones, yeah.
Ozzy Jones called me the day I quit everything and said, yo, there's an apprenticeship at the Arden Theater Company. Do you want to try out for it? It's $150 a week. You're going to end up working somewhere between 14 and 16 hours a week, but you'll get free acting classes and you'll learn everything about theater. What do you say? And I auditioned and I had several meetings and I was the oldest and the only Black person in the building. One thing begat another. Yeah.
So wait, so no Freedom Theater, none of this stuff ever comes into your...
No, I wish. I couldn't afford it.
Or singing in church as a young, like none of that?
Didn't grow up in church.
Wait, so that story about you, it was a story about you not being a part of Freedom, but that like you actually used to help clean up and do stuff around the building. That's not true?
The cleaning up part came later when I was in college. Okay. But that was just because I thought it was dope, but I couldn't afford classes.
Right. Where'd you go to school? College?
Temple. Philly.
What year?
Which one? Oh, I went for 2 years and I took off a year, went for 3 years, took off 2 years, came back.
RTF? Were you an RTF major?
No. I don't even know how many times I went to Temple. I don't. It was just a blur. I swear to you. I just was trying to finish to be the one in my family who finished school. And, you know, they ended up giving me a honorary PhD, which I took. Damn. And I took that shit.
Dr. Scott.
Dr. Scott.
I want that on my passport so bad.
Like, I don't know how long I went there. I'm a doctor.
Dr. Scott.
I'm trying to tell you, the first degree I earned, after that, they gave me the next and the next, but I'm cool with it. I'm good with it.
Damn, Jill, I would have known you had I chosen.
Yo, I got into creative and performing arts. I really would have known you.
You could have went to Kappa?
Why I got into both schools, to Girls High and the Kappa, and I was terrified. I was terrified of that neighborhood. I was like, I already got enough shit. Now I'm going to go into South Philly neighborhood. I'm scared. Like, they're going to kill me. They're going to try to.
Yo, you said that like no you straight trouble. Philly.
All day.
I'm Philly pronounces scared. S-K-A-E-R-D-T. Scared.
I was scared. I was like, they're going to kill me. I can't go here. That was at the audition. And I changed my mind and I got in as a writer.
You were a creative writing major?
I was a creative writer. I would have been.
She's an English teacher, yeah.
I would have been. But I changed my mind and went to Girls High instead.
That is crazy. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
So wait, did you know Sean in high school?
I did. We went on
our
prom together.
Our current manager, Sean G.
You knew Sean in high school? Wow.
You and Sean G went to the prom together?
We didn't go to the
Wait, what?
That's what she said. She just said that.
Wait, no, went to prom together?
Yeah, but we weren't.
Sean G never told me that. You were Sean G's prom date?
No, we went on a prom together. We all went and sat together. Oh, same car, same thing. Yeah.
How many
That's
people?
How I knew Sean. It was me, my date, him, and his date, Courtney, and his date. So it was six of us. It was six
in
of
the
us.
Alibaba limousine.
That's right.
Wow.
That's dope. That's a dope story of you and Sean. Like, what an evolution.
Yeah, I think limousine. I met him when I was 14. I had to be 14 or 15. I think I might have been 15. But I got pictures of young Sean in my office somewhere.
We need this.
Blackmail material.
Oh, come on, yo. Oh, wait. Shit. Because I knew Sean's going to listen to this episode. I got some really good on Sean.
You got some tapes? You got some rap tapes? What you got? Oh, rap tapes.
Man, I scoured the earth for Sean's record.
Oh, my God.
Are you going to pull it out? Oh.
All right, well, wait.
I need that.
Here's the thing. No, I got it. And he sounds like it's straight. He's straight LL 85. Like, you
know,
Fonte's eyes right now.
He said he taught Tariq his whole style. That's what he said.
That's Sean. That's his claim to fame. That's what Sean says.
Well, he does say that.
But the thing is that, yeah, that. Sean was like the family star. Tariq had FOMO because, like, you know, Thanksgiving, Sean has a 12-inch single out and was getting play on local radio. Blowy B was like, you know, and Tariq was like, where did they get a load of me? And then that's what inspired Tariq to, like, step up.
I to the people that don't know that Sean and Tariq are cousins because most people.
Yep.
Don't. Yeah.
Yeah.
But this is where it even goes deeper. Angela Nissel, my...
Angie,
former OK Player partner and current writer at Mixdish. One day she asked me for like some interstitial rap music. Like, do I know like a real cheap random rap song that's like kind of bad from like 1985, 86? Like when they do a flashback thing like that time back in 1985.
Yeah. And they played the music. Yeah.
Right. And so I was this close to getting that song cleared on Mixdish, but I would have had to. I would have to been the owner of the publishing to make it happen.
Oh, damn.
Oh, God.
Yeah, because I wanted to be something where, like, Sean was just watching TV.
And it just come out of
it. Just heard his.
See him now. What
how do I get this?
Oh, instantly. As soon as I get it off this phone, I will send it to you. Oh, man.
Yes.
All of us, man. Yes. We dropped that whole.
I've been saving this record for, like, the right moment to drop it.
I want to hear the other six songs that Scott and I did. What happened to them? I don't know if you have them, but I'm curious because
it's in Philly.
That was my first time with Scott not having baggage. Right, Babbage.
Oh, Babbage.
Right, Babbage.
G13.
Oh, sorry.
Real weed.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. Scott was on a whole other level. I was like, wait. Wow.
This is awesome. The chronic, Jim.
They called it white boy weed back then.
This is wonderful. This is a beautiful sensation. Woo. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was Scott Storch at work.
At what point, even though you didn't have a traditional church experience, or community theater experience, as most our guests do. Like, where does music play in your life, or at least the first formative years, like your first 8 years? Like, what was the first record you ever bought, or the first concert you went to? And
were you allowed to have it in the house?
Say it again.
I said, was she allowed to have it in the house?
Okay. Yeah.
Wait.
Yeah.
Right.
I had JW. Glow in the dark record player. Yeah. I was allowed. Let's see. My first record, I took The Wiz to my third grade show and tell, and everybody hated it.
What?
I was devastated.
Man.
I knew something was wrong with those people.
You played The Wiz.
Something's wrong with them. And they hated it.
So you brought a record to school.
Yes.
And they didn't appreciate it as much.
At all. They thought it was awful. They booed. I was like, you're all insane. I'm out of here. I'm not.
What was your jam? Place. What was your jam on the record, Jill?
Oh, Brand New Day.
Yes.
You know how I know how you are about the Wiz Lightyear. Yes. The Wiz poster is in a frame above my son's toilet.
I love
the
Wiz. You for that.
Yes.
No, you know something though? I think the Wiz is a great horror movie.
Dude.
It could be.
You know what? I mean, in the beginning, yes.
The Wiz is a hard sell.
It is.
One night, I conducted an experiment. It was one of these nights where we had like a Thanksgiving run, like a tour. I had Thanksgiving off, but not enough to really like plan anything with family. So this time I was stuck with a bunch of people that I work with. We call them white people. And
I was wondering when you were going to say hello to me.
And I was like, I want to see how white people react to the Wiz.
Ooh, this is good.
Yo.
Tell me.
It freaked them out. It was to them, it was like an acid trip. Like, yeah, and watching the Wiz through their eyes. Then they were like, yo, this is the scariest shit we have ever seen. Like,
now, as a kid, like watching the Wiz and when Evelyn, when her nails like,
go backwards
that,
and
yeah, get the fuck out of here with that shit, man. That shit is scary as hell. That was not meant to be consumed.
To
I think we were just happy to see black people. I think that's what it was for us. We was like, we got Michael Jackson, we got Dana Ross. Like, we're just happy to see black people acting. But
and
when
the songs
you actually
were good.
Start,
hello?
Yeah, the
and
songs were great. Right.
But the metaphors were so perfect. Black man can't catch cab in New York City.
Yeah.
The young woman who can't get out of the house, you know, still living at home with her mama. Mm. You know, all of those things that were actually occurring, the poppy fields or the hookers on the street, you know, right. All of that. It was the metaphors were perfect for the hood. It was wonderful. As a writer, I just fell in love. And then I met Quincy Jones and was like, I just want to tell you that the Wiz, they're great. He was like, I hated that whole process.
He hated
I was
every like, moment of it.
Him and Charlie, they hated each other. Well, he hated Charlie because.
It's, you know what it was? Okay, as the elder statesman of this crew, because you all were three at the time when it came out.
Yeah.
I'm saying that to watch. Like the morning that it came out and to watch it in its first run, I had to stand in line for 3.5 hours. You remember the Sam Eric?
Oh, you saw it at the movies. Like you saw it in the theater.
Dude. Shut up, Fonte.
No, I'm just saying.
Yeah.
No, it's just certain things. And I'm just like, oh shit.
Yeah, no. The Wiz.
In so a theater.
I think now that I'm looking in hindsight, the excitement and the buildup to what the Wiz was probably
better than the movie itself.
No,
No, I'm not saying that it was a bad film because this is the thing we have to know. Like Sidney Lumet technically lost his career after the Wiz, like after batting out the park with like Dog Day Afternoon.
Yeah, Dog Day Afternoon. Yeah, that was the one. Yeah, yeah.
All these other films that he did. I think he did Serpico. And the Wiz was seen as a failure. Now, you know, and I also have issues with how black films are judged by non-black critics.
Yeah.
By higher levels. So I know that there is also points off of that, of just culturally not understanding.
You got a Tony. I mean, what are we talking about?
I know, but the Wiz is a hard sell. Now, recently watching it, it's a hard sell. Recently watching it, I realized what Jill was saying, like, oh man, there's a lot of the Wiz could also be like a self-esteem motivational package. Like, cause I saw it in a whole different light now, post therapy, life coaching, that stuff. And then I was like, oh, okay. I see the lessons here.
Be a lion.
You're standing strong and tall.
Steve, have you ever seen the Wiz?
Oh, I've seen The Wiz a bunch of times.
I saw The Wiz and I saw the sequel, Wiz Wit.
Wait, what?
I thought that joke would do better.
No. Wiz Wit.
I was saying there was a sequel to The Wiz.
It's a sequel to Wizard of Oz, not The Wiz.
Come on. Try to keep up.
The Wiz reloaded.
I wanted another one. I still want another one, but it couldn't
okay,
be.
Okay, so what's the second? What's the plot line of the The Wiz? What's the second? What would be the next, the sequel in The Wiz? Like, what's the storyline?
It would have to be a lost Dorothy. A lost Dorothy, meaning she doesn't know who she is or how to be. She's trapped in a world where she's, weaved out and contacted. And
you're Dorothy's in the 80s?
Wow.
What it may be. But I think there's a lot of like that going on for
I think
Dorothy.
We should have the black version of Wicked, just like they have it now. You know what I'm saying?
I love Wicked. That was awesome.
I never
too.
Saw that. Because
it was so good.
The sequel to The Wizard of Oz was like,
yeah. But
what's better, the movie or the soundtrack?
For The Wiz?
Yeah.
I'm going to go with the movie.
Because there's dancing elements.
The soundtrack doesn't make sense unless you've seen the movie.
And it's weird because the soundtrack is technically a story. It's the movie without visuals, which is why I think it was a hard sell for Jill to get a bunch of third
kids to listen
fourth
to
graders to
third and fourth grade class.
Yeah, but home is
you were a teacher playing it for them?
No, I was a student.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they booed.
But yeah, home can live anywhere. Don't y'all think? Home can live anywhere.
Yeah, but what does that mean? What does home mean?
Oh, the song. I'm just saying the song.
Anywhere, anytime, anybody. Yeah. But I wouldn't want to see like pop stars sing it. I wouldn't want to see, I would like to see, like, grab some folks out of Juilliard, you know, and have them portray these incredible people to make it stick, so it has ribs, you know, not just, you know, fancy characters. I don't want to see that. I would like Dorothy to have guts. I would like her to be afraid.
What was it like for you to perform in front of Michael Jackson at the 30th anniversary performance? Or was that just a weird experience altogether?
It was a very strange experience. I got there and it felt like nobody was there before Michael Jackson, no one. And that bothered me a lot because I had turned down a role with Denzel Washington to be there because I really, really wanted to honor Michael Jackson and I was doing The Wiz. So it meant a lot to me. And I got there and it just felt like nobody was about it. Like nobody was really there to honor him. And I remember getting on stage and now they've added other people to this performance, which really frustrated me too. Great artists, but that's not what I had in mind. And anyway, long story short.
What was your idea was to do what?
To do You Can't Win. To have the scarecrows, the whole thing, the dancing. I think they had Fatima on board at the time to choreograph the thing. I wanted to present him The Wiz, you know, the way that he did it as best as I could with all of my heart. And that didn't work out. They kept adding other people and then added something from The Wizard of Oz to honor Liza Minnelli, who's his homegirl. And I was like, what the fuck? And I got on stage and I looked to the left and there was Michael Jackson. He was paper white. It wasn't any kind of human white. He was paper white. And I didn't want to look anymore. I was like trying to hold back tears during the performance because he was sitting, not Liza Minnelli, Liz Taylor was sitting on one side of him and Macaulay Culkin was sitting on the other. He just didn't even look like a person.
That he
like
was present.
He was there, but when I tell you that color was not a people color, it hurt me. It hurt me. And I get off stage and I'm all upset. I'm so upset and everybody's so happy. It feels crazy when you're in the midst of this business and something impacts you in a way, you know, in the midst of it. Like, so I get off stage and everybody's celebrating and how great that was. And I can't even hear them. And then I turn my head and there's Bobby Brown and Whitney Houston. And Whitney Houston, God rest her soul, walks over and I'm trying to get myself together, and I look down, and all I could think was that her knees were bigger than her thighs. Ooh. My heart is racing. Mm-hmm. And I cried the rest of the night. I just could not stop crying. I could not get myself together because these are people that I admired and respected and wanted them to be okay. You know, I wanted them to be healthy and thrive, and they just weren't. They just weren't.
What year was this?
2001. And the next day was 9/11. The next day was 9/11.
Was it two performances or one? Because I know there were.
I don't know. I did one. And then I saw it. It was on TV one night years later, and I wasn't even in it. And I was like,
Did you ever get to circle back and like, did you ever speak with him? Did you ever get to have contact with Michael?
I just talked to him on the phone. He called me one time to say that he liked me. And, you know, that was it. I was on tour. And he just called to say that he liked me, and he was going to send me a hat that I never got.
Aww.
Yeah, I didn't like that Michael Jackson thing.
You must have had quite a few moments of like those industry clarity moments. I know Fonte has them all the time too, when you just like, this is where I wanted to be. Man, this is
You mean as far as diminished returns are concerned?
Yeah. I mean, or just reality of this reality.
So How long is it before it kicks into you? Now, I got into an unfortunate place where the only way that I could navigate my way through those disappointments was to then lower myself and lower my spirit to a place where I constantly just came in
to be disappointed.
Exactly. Which is really putting a Band-Aid over a bullet wound, because it might help cope with that moment, but in the long run, that didn't service like my soul or my being and enjoying life and that sort of thing. Because then, I mean, you do that for 10 years and then you become cynical and then you become evil and then you become, I mean, it's just levels of low self-esteem and all that stuff. So, I mean, how long was it until, like, for you, was there ever a point where you're just like, oh, all my idols might disappoint me, or let me not meet them and let me not take this phone call or have this lunch with this person? You know, I didn't even know you could have access to Michael Jackson. I'm like, wait a minute.
You had Prince.
Yeah.
Yeah. But even then, meeting him was a very big, be careful for what you ask for, because I mean, I'm not saying it wasn't idea. I mean, we had great moments where it was fun and it was like everything I really dreamed about, playing with my idol. But there were a lot of, I mean, you've seen that stuff. There are a lot of moments that were like, oh man. It was better in my head, the idea in my head of Prince, than what I got dealt with.
There are a couple of things. One is, I'm really grateful that I grew up as a Jehovah's Witness. I had posters of New Edition on my wall. I loved them. I talked to them. My grandmother, I came home one day and my grandmother took all my posters down. And she said, "You're idolizing these boys." And I was like, "No, I'm not. No, I'm not." And she's like, "You're in there talking to them and telling them how you feel. They're people. No man is above you and no man is beneath you." I was devastated, and I didn't like my grandmother for a long time.
That's real shit, though.
That's real shit.
Damn, awful love to cost you $20.
This is the shits of it all. You have these dreams and you have these ideas of what the world is supposed to be like, and it is what it is. So what do? I take the good wherever I could find it, and I hold on to that as hard as I can. That's all I can do. The rest, I see it for what it is, and, you know, I'll forgive it for because it's whack. You know, I'll just forgive it because and keep pushing. There's no need to hold on to that shit. It's disturbing and disappointing, but, you know.
Has it been times in your career where it may have been someone that you met, like a younger artist or just anyone, where you think you may have came across the wrong way to them and kind of been a disappointment to them, and you had to kind of go back and clear up and be like, yo, I didn't really mean it that way or whatever? Like, have you ever found yourself on that side of the transaction?
I'm certain because I'm not, you know, perfect. I'm certain that they caught me in the middle of something, and I'm trying to deal. I remember this is an advanced artist, but I saw Chaka Khan. I was so excited. I was like, oh my God, you're so beautiful. You're a beast. I just love you so much. And we're at the Grammys. I think I won that time. So I'm walking around like, oh shit. You know, I wore the right shoes. I wore flip flops. You know, my feet don't hurt. So my personality's good. You know, I'm so excited. And one of her folks comes over to me and they're like, Miss Khan is upset with you. I said, Miss Khan, who? This is Chaka Khan. I said, Chaka Khan is upset with me? What did I do? So I don't know, but I'm going over there to find out because it's Chaka Khan and I love her. So I go over there and she was like, you called me obese. And I was like,
what?
Wow. Oh.
Ba-doom-ps.
I'm glad you cleared that up.
I'm so glad that I had the good sense to go over there. We laughed hysterically. I was like, you know, I don't mean I hit it with the end, but
like whatever. Like, who got the gall to say that shit to you, Miss Khan?
For real. And me?
Me? You know, how could I call? What? I was like, oh my God, this is crazy, but very funny.
I'm so
these
glad.
Things happen. These things happen.
So, Jill, what are the beginning steps that starts with you getting your record deal? Wait a minute. First of all, can you clear up something?
I'll try.
Is Hidden Beach Michael Jordan's label? And I'm only asking this because I'm so obsessed with the ESPN 30 for 30 Michael Jordan
Last Dance
documentary thing. Yeah. I think I was told that Hidden Beach was his label or something. What was Hidden Beach?
Well, Hidden Beach, Michael Jordan invested in Hidden Beach.
Okay, so he was
I think, like the major investor and the face of at the time.
I didn't know if Steve or Michael, if Michael like started the label and then had him run it or whatever.
No, but it was incredible to be around him. And he certainly put me in really nice rooms.
Hmm. So he was an active investor.
For sure. Dope. Yeah. Yeah. He kind of liked me a little bit, and I was glad. got a chance to see some things and taste some things I didn't know existed. I was like, what is this, you say? That's gonna go. Dope.
Oh. Yeah, a buddy of mine from down here, Charles Whitfield, he was around at that time. And yeah, I've heard a lot of those stories, the MJ stories, they're wild.
Oh, y'all went to the Boulay parties.
He hooked us up.
The Boulay
birthday parties, all Boulay. That. It was great. I don't know Boulay. You gonna tell me later. You gonna tell me later?
Oh, with the Boulay? Oh, the Boulay is the black bones and you know the black.
Oh, like Illuminati.
Yeah, the black Illuminati. Oh. They're called the Boulay.
No, like the Illuminati didn't want me.
Okay,
they didn't want me. I wouldn't.
I've never heard that in my life.
They recruiting one of my DC friends, Bill. That's not for you to know, my friend.
Clearly, thank you.
Yeah. you don't know what's up with the Illuminati, Bill.
Clearly, I don't want to join. I just the secret society.
It's the black skull and bones. The black skull and bones.
Black skull and bones. Okay.
Now, they never wanted me ever.
No, they didn't want me. I didn't get
it. Perform.
I didn't get my Boulay Evite.
Amir's real quiet because he's in it.
Listen.
I might be in it.
Tell us, Jill. All right. So you've known Amir for a long time, longer than any of us have.
Oh, God.
How have you seen him evolve? Who was the person you met, 20
you
years
might as well
ago?
Just ask Laia this question.
She's next.
Jill. How have you seen him evolve?
Wow. Okay.
No, man. He was more.
He loves
talking about himself.
In the beginning, he was so quiet. He hardly ever said anything to me. He barely ever looked me in the face. And you, am I lying? You would hardly ever look me in the face. And I would come in and give me a hug. Give me a hug. And I had to,
probably just shy 5 years ago.
Rich was more lovey than you were. Rich was a lovey.
Oh, yeah. That's what it felt like on the titties, though.
I didn't want to get sent to HR, yo.
Do you remember you had played, I was on the road with you guys. You had played or something and you were really tired. And I was like, well, let me massage your ankles. Do you remember this? And I came to your room and massaged your ankles and you fell asleep.
That's my job now, Jill, by the way. Just so you know.
Mir, like, I don't even let motherfuckers see my ankles. What he's
like,
what?
Very sexy.
He allowed me that time and he rested, and which is what I hope for. He seemed so stressed and tired. And I was like, well, can I massage your ankles?
Is rare. Amir did not rest. So that was a big
right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay.
I have massaged a lot of people in this lifetime. Man, just
oh, that's your game, Jill.
I wish I remembered this.
It's just like, man, I
you
think
forgot
I,
a massage
I think
by
I can
Jill
help.
Scott.
Yes, I think I can help. It's not
how
a
great
game.
Is your life?
I just think I can help. That's
wait,
all.
This is funny. Wait. Side note. Because the first time that Erica tells the story of didn't you know, she said the same thing about Dilla. And I hit him up like, wait a minute. You had a massage by Erica Badu when you was making, like, she was massaging him as he was cutting up, chopping up the samples.
Yeah, the joint.
The Tarika Blue sample. He's like, I don't remember it happening like that, dog.
It was
a charm life.
Anything but sweetness. It was good. And you rested.
Illuminati
which,
thank you. I'm good. I'm probably at the happiest place in my life right now, Jill. So that's,
it looks good on you.
Thank you. I appreciate yeah. it. Take okay, that so, unpaid bill.
So, Sade sweatshirt wearing motherfucker. I hear you.
But she toting the tech though.
No, but can I? So now that we did all the soft and mushy, can I just ask? Because y'all missed part of the story. Because I know that Jill ended up on tour singing You Got Me, but how did we get to the point of the different vocalists? And then I want to know
okay,
who's
so
going to get to play it on the verses.
Here's the deal. Oh.
Yeah, I want to hear yours.
Here's
version.
The deal. So what I remember was Joe and I had a lunch date. And do you remember us going to Copas 2 on South uh-oh. Street?
Yeah.
Jill is one of six people whose demo I actually listened to and actually liked, like envied that it wasn't mine. The other, and I've said this story before, the other acts were Bilal, Slum Village, Little Brother, Jill Scott, Georgia Ann Muldrow.
Damn, she's been around that long?
That long.
Georgia been in it for a minute.
That was six.
Jay Davey. Six. I'm missing
remember
one.
What you said to me?
No, I heard it.
I'll never let you forget. He told me I would never sell a record.
No, 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 no. I forgot. I forgot. Now, first of all, this is me. This is me.
I don't.
Does that sound like me or does that sound like Rich Nichols?
That was you.
It sounds like you.
Shut up, Steve.
Wow. You hit him with the temptation.
Wait, Jill, you brought this up before. Jill, and I have issue with this. I don't think I ever said that.
Alternate fact.
This no
alternate fact.
Listen, I remember sitting at the table. You handed me your disc, man. Yes, it was 1998.
I still have that, by the way.
And I remember first I was like, wait a minute. There's someone else in Philadelphia making music. First of all, I was envious of the tracks because I didn't know.
You are skating around this one song. I'm just trying to get this.
I'm not. Hit. No. I'm gonna get to that. But this starts at Copas.
Okay.
This starts at Copas. And she said that I said.
That's never a good start.
I don't think that ever. Oh, all right. Hang on.
Like Joe Biden right now.
I'm the king, Jill. I'm the king of my thoughts and my words being on the opposite sides of the town. But I don't think there's ever a time in life in which I was not your biggest fan.
So why is it not her and Eve? I'm just come on. Get
I'm gonna get to that. Okay. I'm gonna get to that. Okay. I'm gonna get to that.
Okay.
But, I know that story.
But Jill, no. But Jill has always said that in the beginning, I wasn't fully supportive. And I said that she would never sell anything. Only because I don't think that I thought that, or maybe I just thought like, oh, this is so good that maybe mainstream.
Yeah, I could see that.
Mainstream audience won't get this, but I was instantly in love with it.
I've heard you tell this story about Baduism. I haven't heard it about Jill.
You told her she wouldn't make it without you neither?
He didn't say she'd make it out of it.
See, no, not the same story, but starts.
No.
So it's Baduism.
No. What I heard was you saying, I've read in a magazine, I think it was Vibe or something, you heard Baduism and you were like, yo, I like it, but will, you know, the hood get it?
I tend to think that things that I love isn't necessarily palatable to mainstream America.
And that's fair.
Oh, I was wrong. So maybe that's what I was trying to say, but I, in no way was I not, I want to repaint this history between you and I, Jill Scott, and say for the record that if I took a lunch date with you about your music, I've never invited no one to the studio but you. And that includes D'Angelo and Erica and anyone else I've worked with. You're literally the lone human being.
Well, you invited D'Angelo. He just didn't show up.
He did for 5 minutes, then he left.
And so
it's more on me.
All right, hey. Now, you know, I finally heard that quote.
Oh, it's more on me. Yeah.
I was listening to that on the mic, episode.
Jill, when
I heard that quote. It's an inside joke. All right. So now for Laia's story. All right. So the story you got me is I hear it and instantly know that this is going to change my life. I run downstairs from Joe Tarsia's room where Scott's playing it for me. Me, Scott, and Rich are listening to the results of him and Jill. And we're like, that's the one. And instantly, I told Scott, stop playing it because I don't want Rich getting demo at us. We ran downstairs. I did it. So the drum and bass argument was probably like a 3-day thing. And I was like, okay, great. I'll just do it the regular way. I won't put any fancy smancy things on it. And I'll do it. We do the song. It's fucking awesome. So we go to New York.
And this is with Reek's vocals on and everything. It's done and done. Or this is just the backing track.
You know what I think? I think he struggled with the last verse, so I know. All right, so we have other issues going on.
Oh, okay.
All right, so here's the deal. Communication in the Roots band in 1999 wasn't too... What is up with y'all motherfuckers? Like, why y'all EF-butting me?
We know.
Yeah. We know about communication.
We know.
Here's something that you guys don't know. Communication in the Roots band isn't too ideal. So here's the, all right. So snag number one, and you got me. Okay. Number one, I mean, we've made it very public. Malik's codependency problem is now becoming a major problem for the band. There have been situations of fights and money and all this stuff. And I'm sort of like, well, is he or isn't he? What's he doing? Is he drinking too much? Da, 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 da. And then you see vials of white powder and shit. And so we're dealing with that type of drama. So something happens that gets us kicked out of Sigma because of Malik. So now vocal headquarters are now at Larry Gold's at the studio. So problem number one is we're not all in the same place at the same time working and interacting. So now it's like a factory. Joe Tarsia still likes me because of his history with my father. So sort of like, Amir, you can stay. But, you know, Malik and all of his running buddies and all that stuff, they got to go.
The niggas got to go. Right.
Right. Mm. So all music's being tracked at Sigma. And then we send them to 7th and Callahill to the studio to be recorded. So while that's happening, there's also a third factor is mixing. So between mixing with Axel Niehaus and Bob Power, so in the morning I'm tracking, and then the evening I'm mixing in New York. Suddenly I'm getting these tapes, and I'm hearing this girl like, wait. And I'm calling Rich like, wait, who's this female voice on track 14 doing ad-libs? And he was like, you know that girl Eve? That's her. And so I'm like, oh, man, come on.
Oh,
like,
you didn't even have a part in the Eve part. Okay.
Oh, wow.
I didn't know who the fuck he was. I didn't know she was.
Wow. That's Kilo. That's Kilo.
No, that was Reek ML and Kamal. And I mean, look, by this point, and we're totally skipping over like the jam sessions that are happening at the house and everyone being at the house. So Jill's a presence, Jaguar's a presence, the Jazzy Fat Nasties are a presence, News a presence, occasionally, you know, 10-year-old Jasmine Sullivan's a presence. And at some point, then suddenly it's like, okay, Eve. And at the time, you know, it was like her and her girlfriends that she was stripping with or whatever, like they come to the crib. Malik's bringing over these dudes. I don't know. They putting their shit out on my carpet. I mean, it's Beanie and Chris and Neef and those guys. But I don't know them from a can of paint. And they're putting shit out on my carpet. So I started hating the jam sessions. So once it hit me, wait, this is the stripper joint, the joint with the short hair that's on this record. And Rich was like, yeah. And now I'm like, oh man, we're about to do that. Like, come to the studio and wow. I'm like, this is like, I don't know how I feel about, like, no one had a meeting with me about people on the record. But so that's when communication started getting bad. So that was Ain't Saying Nothing New. So it's like, okay, I'll put her ad libs down because I'm just like, no one had a conversation with me about it. So you got me time. Now I'm like, wait a minute, who's this rhyming on the thing? And it was the same situation. And I was just like, yo, like, y'all just putting people on this record and not saying shit. Like, this is our hit. Like, now we already have a voice on here. And now what? Now another person's doing around. Like, this is our one chance to hit this ball out the park.
There can only be one unknown.
And now there's like four entities. Oh, and like, what do we do? So that shit caused like a 3-week debate argument, whatever. So we get the song done. We're playing it for MCA. And now they're like, okay, we believe in the song, but you know, the girl sings good, but we feel like you should have a name to really do that. And we're like, no, like, this, she's killing this shit. She's killing this shit. So then it became a group meeting of like, You Got Me just started to be a nightmare to deal with. Tariq didn't have a third verse. Now it's like, wait, so now we got to, or who's going to tell Jill? Who told you, Jill?
No one.
Bitch, no.
What?
He was on the radio. She was like, who is this bitch?
Nobody told me.
Wow.
Nobody told me.
Hey, guys, Muppet New Flash. Communication, it wasn't the best. Wait. I want to make an announcement. Communication was never the strong point.
There's a rumor.
Roots. And it wasn't even like a mean-spirited thing. It was more just like, oh, he'll do it, or I got other shit to worry about.
Ask Jill when she heard it.
I remember. All right, I'm just saying that.
I like they were talking about really, Jill's not
their logic was like, yo. And, you know, I've heard stories of like, well, she wasn't marketable. Da-da-da-da-da.
It's okay, Amir.
This to them, it was like, she sings great, but she's unknown. And a bird in the hand beats two in the bush. And Erykah Badu said yes, and you got to do it. And then me and Bob Power and Tariq, we flew to Dallas, which at that point she was literally, it was still, I think we did You Got Me maybe early 98, because I know that Dre 3000, when we got to the studio, Erykah just finished whatever she was singing on Outkast's Liberation. So Aquim and I wasn't out yet. So I feel like this is early 98. We get there, we do it. It was cool, but I didn't have the fire in my soul that I felt with Jill's version. At one point midway, Erykah stopped and said, yo, her version is jamming, yo. Like, why don't y'all just use her version? And I was about to agree. And Rich was like, you know, Rich's whole thing is like, look, let's A-B it. Like, just attempt it a few times and whatever, you know, you'll work with it. If it doesn't work, then da-da-da-da-da. But knowing good and well, like, I'm not leaving here without
your vocal.
without this version. Because I was kind of ready to give it. And it was
who
not
gets
enough
to play it, Amir. Who gets to play it this week? who should get to play it this week on Versus?
First of all, will this episode even be?
Oh. It does not matter. People will still want to know. I just need to. This is after. This just yes. This will be afterwards. But still, who gets the right to play?
Well, there's two versions of You Got Me. So Erica can play her version from Things Fall Apart, and then Jill yeah. can play her version.
Not that $2 bill shit
from Things Fall Apart. So I would say.
Why you say not Jill. $2 bill?
Bitch, because you did opera, jazz, blues. No, anybody. That's a whole Olympic.
It's long. It is long. It was long. Oh,
Jill's version of You Got Me is also on the Things Fall Apart.
It is
20th anniversary reissue. So
it is.
I think that's rather cute.
Go ahead. Yeah.
I think it's adorable.
I was gonna say I think two things. One, I think Jill should get to play it because she wrote it.
Mm-hmm.
Two, I would like to offer my hot take mm-hmm. that Complexity. Complexity is a far better song than You Got Me. That's just me. Let me just start there.
Oh, I forgot about Complexity. Oh,
nigga. Because I must give Jill props for Complexity, because Complexity is a very hard word to sing, and you enunciated that so well.
I do enunciate.
Man, and yeah, Complexity is my joint. That's like my favorite Roots Jill joint. I love that fucking song.
Thanks.
That is a dope song.
You know, it's weird. We knocked that off in like 15 minutes. I remember us knocking out very quickly. And me actually thinking like, wow, this was not the, like, thank God this wasn't the drama that you got me was.
Was there lyrics to Complexity when I came in? I don't remember.
No, but it just hit me. You were one of the 14 for the, you. Oh my God, we did. You know what? Complexity was so easy. It made me forget the drama that was the You Got Me. Not You Got Me, the Break You Off.
Oh, the vocalist.
I remember that.
And you know what's weird? Ooh, this is so weird to say this on the air. Jill, you wrote that bridge.
Break You Off?
I forgot she wrote that.
Did she get that credit, nigga?
Did she get that?
That's what I'm thinking in my head right now. Like, wait a minute.
Now is your time for all apologies that you have been wanting to make.
Wait, I could do a whole episode alone on the drama that was Break You Off. By the time it got to Jill, it wasn't even Break You Off. It was Magic Faucet, whatever it was.
Nick.
Your metaphor.
Magic Faucet.
Magic Faucet.
Yeah, wait, Jill, you don't remember it? Like,
tough for the sing.
It sounded like an old Jill Scott poem.
Okay, so you know the second part. You know the second part that the second part of the song that so music sings,
baby.
Right? He changed the words, but that was Jill's chorus, and it was like
okay,
it was some sort of metaphorical definition of whatever, like I'll stroke something and then your faucet will be turned, yeah. You know. So yeah,
metaphor. Nailed it.
I wrote
well,
magic
the
faucet?
Only part they kept was the baby, and then your words were different.
Oh,
but I think Carvin,
that sounds foreign to you, Jill. Like,
I think
magic faucet, sounds elementary.
Oh, no, shit. you.
Yes, it does.
Break You Off started with, weird enough, Kiki Wyatt about to cut Tariq. All right, who's the guy that invented the King of Comedy?
Stan Latham?
No. But the guy that promoted the other black, Steve Harvey.
Not Adolf Shiver. God,
with the twins.
Bill Heyman?
Yeah, Heyman.
Not Bill Heyman.
Al Heyman.
Not Al Heyman, but... Whoever that guy is, that I mean, he's the Will Packard of kind of Al Heyman Jr. for the comic. He's the reason why Steve Harvey and Mac and all those Cedric the Entertainers are the stars they are now. He's the one that threw the Kings of Comedy that Spike shot. He had an idea to have a black SNL, and we shot that pilot in 2001. And it was like the Roots were the house band. Think of SNL. We shot a full blown up with Earthquake and whoever the black comedians were that were popping at the time, shot this thing. And the Roots were the house band. And Kiki Wyatt and Music were sitting in with us and just fucking around. That's how Break You Off gets birthed. and was like, hey, that song we did in soundcheck, that was pretty cool. And let's do it. And so then it went from music to, I think Alicia had stood us up seven times. And then Gerald LaVert did his version, who he technically did the best version.
I want to hear the Gerald version.
Then me Jill too. Wrote it. And then that didn't work out. And then I think
I was
Renee
supposed to have a baby with him.
With Gerald LaVert?
Yep. That was my plan.
I can so see that happen.
That should have been easy. I don't know,
that was my plan. It was also Frankie Beverly.
No.
Oh, wow.
No.
I had three. George Benson, Gerald LaVert.
Does he make babies?
And Frankie Beverly. I don't know. That was when I was 12. That was my list. I was
that baby. Your list at 12?
George Benson, that mustache with the, okay.
Yes, maybe y'all really do mature old fashioned.
I thought he was fabulous.
Because I wasn't 12 years old thinking about fucking Aretha Franklin and shit.
Vanity was out by then when I was 12. So.
right.
Yeah, but that song went around the world. Then it went to Bilal's version was the most curious because he was crying on his version. Like, and then somehow just wound up back to Break You Off. But yeah, it's so by the time all that was done, then yeah, Complexity was done in like 10 minutes. So
I love that song. I love that song.
I like it when it's easy like that, when it's just, you don't even think about it. It's just happening. That's so fun. And then you go on to the next thing. So how did I hear about it?
Yeah, how did you hear about it, Jill?
I was on 22nd Street. I was in North Philly. I think I was probably headed to my theater job. I'm not sure. Probably. And it was coming out of one of the hair beauty supply places. It was on, you know how the
hood is. Wasn't on the radio yet.
It was on the radio when I heard it for the first time.
When she heard it,
when
she heard
it. On the radio when I heard it for the first time.
We are horrible. We trash.
Wait. She still got the
publishing. We played the record on the radio, though.
No.
It was on the, came out of the stores on 22nd Street. I was coming to get probably a perm or something. And I was walking from the beauty supply place. It was coming out of every store. And I heard the beginning. And I got all excited. I was like, oh, shit.
I'm about to come on.
My inner self. I'm just so pleased. And nobody knows. And I was like, God, and even when it comes on, nobody's gonna know it's me. I'm so excited. And then I heard a voice that was not my own, and I was like,
motherfucker,
that's Erica Badu. And I'm looking, there's nobody to talk to. I don't know anybody. I can't share this story with anybody. So
ain't no cell phones yet.
I mean, there were cell phones. I think I just walked to the end of the block, and by the time I got there, I was like, Erica Badu is singing my song.
Okay.
I thought I was going to have to go to witness protection program.
No. I as a writer, to go from zip to a Grammy Award winning singer singing your song, like I was like, I'm in. I can't even deny that. And then you guys were like, well, let's take her on the road. And then I had that horrible lawyer who tried to gank y'all for all of this money. It was horrible. Luckily, we were able to work that out. And
I didn't even know.
Oh, it was terrible. She was just trying to bleed you dry to sing a hook to one song. I didn't do anything else but sing one hook. And then you took me on the road and treated me like a newbie and left me in Paris.
Wow.
Wait. That came through, Amir. That came through. Thanks. I don't know if you heard that.
What happened?
The roots are bad at communication.
They left you in Paris. You left Jill in Paris.
There was a ticket at the desk for me to go home. Luckily, I got the ticket and had to figure out how to get to the airport because you know the French, they don't like you if you don't speak French.
Straight up and down. Facts.
I found a way to get to the airport. Through the airport at the time, they didn't have English translation on anything in the French airport, in the Paris airport.
Blaming Toya Day.
Peter wasn't there then. You could. Left my ass in Paris, and I learned everything. I learned everything from you. I'm not going to say Amir, but from the roots. I learned how I don't want to travel. I learned how I don't.
We are janky.
Tour.
I love
it. I don't know about how you are now, but I know
we're professional now.
Do listen.
I got beams in the house.
They put me in a hotel that it was across the street from their hotel. I think we were in Detroit.
Ooh, and B team.
They said, your hotel is over there. And I was like, over here? They were like, yep, right across the street.
Damn.
Clearly, the smell of cigarette smoke was so strong when I walked in the front door. I was like, fuck, I got to take a shower. I got to take a shower. I'm on a bus full of dudes. I can't. I got to take a shower.
Yo.
So I go in the room. And
we trash, man.
And it's, you know how it's when the woodworks have been painted again and again and again and again. It was. The bed I questioned. I was like, okay, I can't do that. So I took all the towels and I put them in the tub and I showered and dried off with my clothes and got out of there. But while I was in the shower, I had my luggage up against the door because on the outside, they were like, bitch, I told you back in my money. I motherfucker just dropped it off.
So hold on. So let me understand it. So this was a hotel. This was a motel. Like you opened the door and it led to outside.
It led to Crazy House. It was a small house with winding steps that they called a hotel that I think they used for prostitution.
That was a damn halfway house.
It may have been.
Damn.
But that's where I was staying. Yes.
Damn,
yeah.
This explains a lot because I met you on that tour in Switzerland, and I was like, "Man, she sure is short." With the hello, nice, okay. That's what she was. Yeah.
Uh-uh. Damn, y'all had Jill in the Lackawanna Blues house and shit.
I feel like everybody has to have. They have to be hazed to a certain degree. It's a rite of passage. It was the same way with theater. It's the same way with this business. It was the same way with touring. Y'all would do this. This is my favorite. You didn't smoke, but the guys would be like, yeah, man, so.
And blow it right in your face.
Pass by you.
Oh, Tariq is good for that. Oh, Tariq don't share. No, he is admittedly so. He don't.
It was everybody. The only person that was nice to me, Kamal was nice to me.
Yeah.
And, Kamal was nice to me, and Hub would occasionally.
Okay.
I don't know who he is. All right, so go ahead.
Okay, there was a gentleman there.
Okay.
That played an instrument for strings.
Yes. Occasionally, he would tell me, "You're doing okay." And I say, "Okay." Other than that, that was it. I learned so much. Wow. I learned so much. Thank you. Did I ever tell you thank you? Did I ever tell you thank you so much?
I feel like if we had the soundbite of Miss Sophia saying, "Woman ain't chafing a house full of men." Damn.
That's the roughest tour I've ever been on.
And you had to maintain that fro that whole tour.
That fro was beautiful.
That fro was beautiful. Pretty? It made Bahamadia go, wait, is somebody fucking with me? I feel like that fro was.
Yeah. My barber had my hair looking like feathers. It was gorgeous.
Man, remember barbers?
Yeah. Thank you.
So, Jill, damn it.
It's okay. Okay. It's okay now.
It's okay.
Crap.
Okay. I've done
everything happens
good.
For a reason. None of this would have happened if not for the other thing. So
right.
This is like our first real extended conversation that's lasted more than an hour in our 20 years of knowing each other.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now I understand why she ended up working with Jazzy Jeff.
Ladies and gentlemen, you hate to hear it, I hate to say it, but you know, hey, it is what it is. That's only part one of our two-part interview with Jill Scott. Next week, we promise you, more and more Jill. I know. It was cool, right? And then I had to come in and, I know. Anyway, QLS, we will see y'all next week with part two of Jill Scott. Thank y'all.
Questlove Supreme is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.